Spirituality and science together today with Rupert Sheldrake, Matthew Fox, as we talk about their work, The Physics of Angels, exploring the realm where science and spirit meet. Okay, welcome back to Coast with Matthew Fox and Rupert Sheldrake. How did you two, Matthew, how did you and Rupert collaborate on this? How did that all evolve?
Well, we did some discussions together and then some public lectures in various parts of the world, actually, and we recorded those, and then we edited them, and that way we had a book. And, of course, we took questions, too, from audiences, and we mixed them into our own questions that we had for each other. That's what I remember. Rupert's memory may be better than mine.
Rupert?
Well, that's really what we did for our other book, Natural Grace. But for this book, where we take the texts of three main writers on angels, Dionysius the Areopagite, St. Thomas Aquinas, and Hildegard von Bingen, we did actually have a slightly different method for this, as I remember it. We read Dionysius the Areopagite. Both of us read it, and Matthew's much more familiar with these texts than me. He's a theologian and a historian of theology. I'm a biologist. So I hadn't actually read these texts before. So the first thing we did was we read Dionysius the Areopagite, who was writing in the, 7th century or something, and on the celestial hierarchies is the name of his book. Then we met. And we went through the book and decided which passages were the most interesting. So we sort of pulled out the passages that we both agreed were most interesting. Then we discussed them, each passage. And the next time we met, I remember it well, actually, we met on Whidbey Island near Seattle in Washington State. We borrowed someone's house, and we had several days where we went through St. Thomas Aquinas' book on angels, and that one was completely private. There were just the two of us, and it was just, for me, a wonderful experience to go through these texts. That again, we both read them. We'd done our homework. We then decided which were the most interesting passages. We selected those, and they're what appear in our book. They're the selected passages, the most interesting passages discussing angels from these most important writers on the subject in the whole Western tradition. And then we'd switch on the tape recorder and discuss each of these passages, then we edited the discussion. And the last one was Hildegard of Bingen, and some of her works on angels had not been translated from Latin or medieval German, and we had to commission a special translation of Hildegard of Bingen. And so some of the passages we discuss in her very important work are ones which hadn't been published in English before. So this was went on in over a period of a year or so, in between our more public appearances and discussions. So some of our discussions are in private, some of them are in public. But this collaboration that Matthew and I have been having is still going on our websites. There are some recent discussions, including one on angels that we held only 2 or 3 months ago. So this is an ongoing project for both of us.
Okay, let's take some calls. We'll go first and foremost to James in Kansas City, Kansas. James, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hi, I was wanting to ask Matthew if he was familiar with the classical Greek concept of the daemon, how it's not exactly a malign entity, but it's depicted by modern theology as it was depicted then as a higher protective spirit, but I was wanting to ask him if he believed that it had undergone a permutation into the angelic depictions that we embrace today.
I would say yes, that it's another name for angelic categories. Remember that traditionally, Dennis Areopagite, who Rupert just referred to, you know, names 9 different dimensions or layers of angels, and I would say that particular the demonic tradition is among the lower ones, if you will, kind of the less advanced species of angels. But yeah, that it would be part of that circle. Rupert may have an answer to that question too.
Well, I think that the idea of winged beings and that invisible spirits that can act as inspirers or messengers or guides is found all over the world in various traditions. Of course, it's present throughout Judaism and Christianity and Islam in the form of angels. But as you say, in ancient Sumeria, they have pictures of beings like this. The Egyptians had winged beings. The Hindus have devas, the innumerable gods or divine beings. And the point of portraying them with wings, I think, is although some people may actually see them with wings, it's to give the idea that they can move from place to place swiftly, like birds, move at the speed of thought or the speed of light or whatever, but can move, that they're not static. And so I think that one can find precedents and parallels for angels in many different cultures and in shamanic traditions where they have spirits that can move and that can fly. You could probably find yet more parallels. So I think that there are many precedents that have fed into this idea that we inherit through the Christian tradition of angels.
Okay, we go to Anita now in New York. Anita, welcome to the program. You're on the air with us.
Yes, good morning, everyone. Very intriguing show. I'd like to say that certainly this is timely, because if humanity ever needed angels, it's certainly now. And, George, I want to share two brief stories that I think might have been encounters with angels, and see what the take of your guests are. I was very tired one evening, and I had put on a pot of hot tea, you know, hot water for tea.
Sure.
And I was so exhausted, I went to sleep, and although I would have normally gone in a very deep sleep, I actually woke up, because if I hadn't woke up, there would have been a fire.
You would have burned the house down. Okay.
Absolutely. So I think that might have even been an ancestor angel. And the other one is the question of whether an angel can send a dream, because this would have been back in the 90s, and I remember having a dream of being in a car accident, and I remembered the specifics of the dream and where it was and when I was in that exact same space about to go through an intersection, and I was able to avoid being hit on my driver's side, right? And I had a passenger. My brother was with me. So that dream seemed to have alerted me to have been able to prevent that accident. And I'd like their take on that. And I'll hang up and listen. And I also want to know more specifics of how to invoke the angel, especially when you don't know the name. And
okay.
I'll listen over the air.
You got it. In terms of the angelic intervention into the dream state, or that little voice that woke her up so the house wouldn't burn down, let's start with you, Matthew. What is that little voice? Is it a mechanism within herself, or is it indeed an angel that would wake her up?
Well, I think it definitely can be an angel, and also dreams too. That again, Aquinas says that angels carry thoughts from prophet to prophet. So I do think that when we're in a more vulnerable state, when we are asleep, for example, we're not in control so much, that we're more vulnerable to visitations from angels, from ancestors, who carry ideas and often wake us up at 3 a.m. So I think all that is it happens a lot to people, and I think it's kind of an advancement that we can start naming these messengers as angels, and that's really what the word angel means in Greek, is messenger. I think it's very possible that this could be the work of angels, and as far as invoking them goes, I like the emphasis that Rupert puts on the cosmos. So I often pray in the morning to the four directions, because the four directions open us up to the cosmos. That number four is a very important cosmic number, north, south, east, west. So to face the north and call on the angels from the north that bring strength. Face the east is the sun rising, so you call on the angels that bring a new day and creativity. The south is about warmth. You call on the angels to bring you a warm heart. And then the west is about the sun setting. It's about letting go. So you call on the angels to teach you to let go. And then the space above us, if you will, is about wisdom and perspective, like the eagle has. And then the space below us where we stand, the earth. And then it all centers, it all comes together, these six different directions, into the heart. So that's a very simple prayer you can say every morning. And it really opens you up, I think, to the universe and to all the directions that the angels can come from. And again, you don't need their name for this. You simply call upon them. And there are many, many angels. So you can call on many angels to come and visit you, to inspire you, to challenge you, to defend you, make you strong.
Rupert, your take on that little voice that woke her up, what is it?
Well, we don't know where our dreams come from, do we? I mean, we couldn't imagine in advance what we're going to dream about, but somehow the dream world is one where our minds are open to possibilities that don't normally occur to us in our waking life. We're also open to influences from other people and other spiritual beings. Quite a lot of telepathic events can occur in dreams, which are from other people's minds. And we can also have premonitions in dreams, or precognitive dreams, dreams about things that haven't yet happened. Now, nobody knows how these premonitions occur, how this kind of warning that Anita experienced, how that would work. It's simply not known. We do know that people do have premonitions. These things actually happen. Now, to what extent it comes there from an angel that puts the thought into our mind, to what extent it's our own mind reaching out into the future, nobody has a clue. But the point about the sleep state and the dream state is that our minds are open. The fact that we can have telepathic influences in dreams, which is a fact, quite a lot of telepathy happens through dreams, shows that in our dreams, we're probably more open to telepathic communication than in our waking life, when we're preoccupied with other things. And so you could say that the angels could communicate with us telepathically during our dreams. And as I say, it's not as if anyone in the scientific world has much idea about where dreams come from, or even why we dream. These are great unsolved problems. So it's not as if this is an area where there's a clear, sharp scientific understanding. There isn't. It's an area where we're on our own, really, when we're dreaming, because we're having these experiences that we can interpret. Most of our dreams are forgotten, but the ones we remember, we can interpret. Other people can help us interpret them, too. But we're, I think, subject to these influences in our sleep, as we are when we're awake, but we're more aware of it when we're asleep.
Let's go next to Lewis in Buffalo, New York. Lewis, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Oh, thank you very much, George.
Sure thing.
Michael, Rupert, I have one question for you, but actually I've lately getting mail from clairvoyants and psychics, and one person named my guardian angel. Another person, and I don't know if these two people know each other or not, I don't think so, he actually said he was talking to my guardian angel, and he named the same angel. Can an angel work through another person to help you, like this guy's trying to help me?
Matthew?
What? Oh, definitely, absolutely. Again, Aquinas says angels carry thoughts from prophet to prophet, so that's from person to person. And I think Aquinas also says angels learn only by intuition. So I think that word intuition is so important. regarding the previous question, too, about dreams and so forth, but also this question as well, that when you're in the realm of intuition, whether it's in a creative state or whether you have an insight or whether you're in dreams and dreams come to you, or as this gentleman is talking about, other people's thoughts come to you, all that to me is a realm of intuition. And that's where the angels are hanging out. As I say, when you get into your intuition more, you're going to find angels hitchhiking on that same highway. And so I think it is about developing our intuition and recognizing it when it happens. And this intuitive connection you're finding, which is also synchronistic, and that's another important word too, that when you're in the world of synchronicity, where you find so-called coincidences happen that are really meaningful, such as this, you're finding a naming of your angel from several different people, you're in the realm of intuition too, and that's where the angels hang out. So again, I think our culture, our educational system, even our religion, is very underdeveloped when it comes to intuition, because we've had this notion that thinking is just the intellectual or rational brain. But in fact, even Einstein said that intuition is the sacred gift and rationality should be serving intuition. And intuition is the origin of values, not the intellect, says Einstein, but the intuition. So I think as we open up more our intuition, that we will become more balanced people and we will trust more these insights that come our way, and they may well be coming with the help of angels.
What do you think, Rupert, might be the most important, the science or the spirituality of the physics of angels, or is it balanced?
Well, I think that we know more about angels from the spiritual tradition than the scientific tradition. Although talking of science and angels, one very remarkable feature in the history of science is that one of the great founders of modern science in the 17th century was René Descartes, the French philosopher and mathematician. And he had a vision on November the 10th, 1619, of the universe being governed by mathematical laws, a vision that actually led to the scientific revolution, mechanistic science. And he was convinced that that vision was given to him by an angel, the angel of truth. He thought had revealed this to him. He went on a pilgrimage to the shrine of Our Lady of Loreto to give thanks for this vision. So one of the things that's sort of not there, right up there, right up front in the history of science, is how much science itself was inspired by angels in the eyes of these founding fathers.
Well, that's a good point. We're going to come back with both of you and wrap things up and take final phone calls as we talk about the physics of angels. Matthew's website, Rupert's website, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Indeed, we're going to take your final calls here with Matthew Fox and Rupert Sheldrake as we talk about their work, the physics of angels, when we come right back. Okay, welcome back with our final segment with Matthew Fox and Rupert Sheldrake. Matthew, what's next in this physics of angels? Is there a follow-up?
As Rupert alluded to, we've been having some discussions lately, and instead of putting them into book form right away, they're available as iPad, I guess it is, on a radio format on our web pages. So, yeah, we're still pursuing this question of consciousness in particular. That seems to be at the heart of so much of the new science, and, of course, that's Rupert's working definition for spirituality. So we're putting, I think, about one dialogue up each month about various topics, and that's what we're doing together, keeping this conversation going.
And, Rupert, how about you? What do you do next these days?
Well, in my own research, I'm working on the extensions of the mind. I'm doing several projects right now, experimental projects. One of them is on telephone telepathy. I've just developed a new automated test. And what this is about is showing how our minds are interconnected through our intentions. I mean, this is still at the human level, not dealing with bigger forces, but just purely at the human level, there's a way in which our minds extend far beyond our brains. And I think that our minds extend out to touch or influence the objects of our intention. That's why if I think about you, George, and you're not aware of me at the time, and my intention reaches out to you, you might pick it up and start thinking about me, and then if I'm thinking about you because I want to call you, I then call you. And
right.
That's funny, I was just thinking about you. Happens to people all the time.
It sure does. It's or a song on the radio you're thinking of, and bang, it pops up, or a phone call, and the phone rings.
Exactly that. So that's the kind of thing I'm doing research on at the moment, you see, because I think that all this shows that our minds are not just confined to the inside of our heads. In my book, The Science Delusion, I discuss the way that consciousness is much more extensive than our minds. And incidentally, something that I might mention now is something that's just happened that I've been involved in, a new website that's just come online called opensciences.org, opensciences in the plural, which is a portal for new research in the sciences, particularly in the realm of consciousness studies, because this is the most rapidly growing and most exciting area of the sciences today, exploring the nature of consciousness, not just in relation to brain scans and the brain, that's pretty mainstream, but in relation to the way that the mind extends beyond the brain, both in space and in time. And of course, this relates to our discussion today about the physics of angels, because angels are nothing if they're not conscious beings. And to understand the nature of consciousness, we need to understand what's going on in minds, and the best starting point is our own. And there's so much about our own minds that we don't really understand. That's really where most of my research is directed right now. And I hope that these ongoing discussions with Matthew Fox will help to expand this, because what he brings to the table is a deep knowledge of the Western tradition of theology, spiritual traditions, which, after all, have been exploring consciousness long before the sciences got on board with consciousness studies, which has only really been going on in as a major field of science for 20 years. I mean, theologians have been talking about these things for centuries, indeed millennia.
Okay, let's go back to the phones now in the time we have left. George is in San Antonio, Texas. Hey, thanks for holding, George. Go ahead.
You bet. Hello, gentlemen. I just wanted to say this is really a fine show. I've been into this area myself. I just wanted to let you know that I have had many communications with some of the archangels, Archangel Michael, Archangel Metatron, Archangel Mywamas. And there is a hierarchy. They are the main angels, but then you have the Seraphim and the Cherubim. But it happened when I was about 22. I was taken up. I had started meditating. I didn't know what I was doing, but I did it very earnestly. And I said, if there is a God, I want to see him face to face. And one night when I was on the porch holding my dog after a rain, I started to transition, and I ended up in the fifth dimension. And I was told to walk down. If we finished our conversation, they taught me universal law. They told me to walk down a marble hall that wasn't there when I first landed in this room. And I was walked into a light source. Later on, I found out that was, I was wrapped in the cloak of the El Shaddai. And I asked, what is the El Shaddai? You hear Christians singing to it, but basically it's the light body of Archangel Metatron. And his voice is the voice that his spirit came out of the clouds and said, this is my son for whom I'm well pleased. And I've had many conversations with Archangel Michael.
Do you summon them up, George, or do they just come to you?
Well, this one night when I was taken to the fifth, they came to me, but I was asking, if there is a God, I want to see him face to face. So this is what came to me. This is, and I asked this and prayed for this in great earnest. great sincerity. It wasn't just mumbling words. There was a great sincerity in my heart. And so I was, later on, I was working in San Antonio. I was walking into my clinic. It was a two-doctor clinic. I was turning on the lights and setting the air temp. And I could barely function like I usually do. I started getting this message, as telepathic, I guess, saying, "Are you ready to be of service?" And so I just sat down to my laptop and started writing what I was getting as fast as I could. Well, the next day was Saturday, and I was having a session with Archangel Michael. And before we got started, I asked, I had a channel. She's a very high channel. She was part of the outer circle of the 12 when Jesus walked. And Archangel Michael said, "Before we get started, I wanted to know if you are ready to be of service to me." And I said, "Oh, yes." And when they say, "George, my son," you know, it just grabs your heart and tears pop in your eyes. He told me that he's been with me for thousands of years, so that means many lifetimes. And he said, "Many times I gathered that I got myself in a scrape." He said, "I took you by the hands and helped you move through."
It's a little like footprints in the sands. Matthew, I want to get your take on this. We're running out of time, and every phone line is lit here.
Huh. Well, I like the part about service, because I go by Jesus' teaching, by their fruits you'll know them. And you know, what are the fruits of these experiences that we have, these extraordinary experiences? You know, do they make us a better person? Do we serve others more deeply and more profoundly and with more courage? So I think that question about service is at the heart of this, that we are all here to serve. We're here to serve future generations that aren't born yet, which is why we really have to care passionately about the planet and make sure that it's healthy for future generations. So I think that word service is at the heart of all this. And again, by their fruits you'll know them. So I think that's the key, and I commend George that he's about service, and I encourage him to be that, and to bring along whatever outside encouragement he's getting from these angelic experiences to make him a more useful citizen on the planet.
We now go to Diane, Gig Harbor, Washington. Hi there, Diane.
Hi, George. How you doing?
Good.
I'll try to be quick. I can. I was brought up believing that, you know, there was a Holy Ghost and a guardian angel and everything, but I didn't really put much thought to it. And several years ago, it was right after Christmas, and I was scheduled for back surgery the following January, so I was on prescription pain medication, and kept, you know, it make you really tired all the time. Well, I was staying with a friend that owned some motorhomes on some property, and he'd gone to California for his the holidays, and the day after Christmas, the power on the light pole went out. You know, the switch broke.
Yeah.
So we didn't have any power, and my phone was dying, and I was trying to get a couple of text messages out for help, but nobody came to help, and there was a guy staying on the property, too, but it he'd been kind of mean to me, so I was afraid of him, and I didn't want to, you know, there was more than one motorhome. And so I stayed alone by myself, and my stomach was hurting bad, but I couldn't figure out why. And I'd just go to sleep, and next day I'd kind of call out for help, you know, somebody could call 911 for me, and nobody would call, because it was right by a boat launch. And so on the third day, I went outside, I was banging on a pan, trying to get somebody's attention to call 911 for me. And the neighbor across the street saw me, and I said, "Would you call 911 for me?" And he says, "Okay." Well, you kind of just turn around and walk back down his driveway. So I went back in the motorhome, and I got myself ready, and I fall asleep waiting for an ambulance to show up. And there's no radio on or nothing, because there's no power, right? And in the still darkness and the still the motorhome, I hear my name called out one time, and I went who's that, you know? They'll be around here, you know, say my name. And but it kind of startled me, and I thought, somebody's trying to tell me something. So I got up and I went across the street to where this gentleman lived, and I says, did you call a 911 for me yet? And he goes, no, would you like me to? And I says, yeah. So, you know, he got an ambulance there and got to the hospital, and they were real busy that night, and they kept trying to find out what was wrong with me, and they couldn't figure it out. And finally, one doctor did an ultrasound, and he goes, I think we have a situation here. We need to check it out in your stomach. Your appendix might be
ready to burst, saved again by some angelic intervention. I got to tell you, though, Rupert, I wonder if we do have this ability within our bodies, without this outside help, to do these things, like what Diane went through. Maybe it was her who she did this. What do you think?
Well, it's difficult to know, isn't it? Because we've grown up with the idea that our minds are inside our bodies. I think our minds are much more extended than our bodies, and you know, just in ordinary everyday life, we're interconnected with other people. Premonitions occur not just to people, but also to animals. I mean, animals can pick up when earthquakes are going to happen, for example. How do they do it? No one knows. Dogs can pick up when their owners are coming home, as I describe in my book, Dogs That Know When Their Owners Are Coming Home. Our minds are extended, and so it's hard to know where our minds leave off and other minds begin. You know, like we were discussing earlier in our dreams, how much is a product of our own minds, how much is influences coming from other people or from other conscious beings like angels. There's no simple way of finding that out right now. But as we move into the idea of an extended mind, we get a greater sense of what minds can do, but also a greater sense of how they're interconnected.
Next up, we have James in Las Vegas. Hey, James, go ahead.
Yeah, I would just comment about Lot and Sodom and Gomorrah.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that he was warned by angels. I've had discussions with people saying that angels cannot incarnate on the planet, you know, and I have to beg to differ. In addition, I'd make another comment about, you know, homeless people, because, you know, I've had experiences with people that, you know, you never do know you might be entertaining an angel in real life, you know, coming down and testing your compassion for a fellow human being.
I've always thought about that possibility. Angels testing us for stuff like that. Matthew, what do you think of that?
Well, there's many stories like that in the Bible, for sure, and beyond the Bible. Definitely. Again, angels can take on any form, so they can take on the form of a homeless person or what have you. And it's an invitation for us to expand our powers of compassion, and that's pretty important.
Are they jealous of us?
I think they are at times. Hildegard of Bingen talks about how angels praise human works. And, you know, we can do things that angels can't. Angels can't make love or make babies and be parents in that way. And I think there's a certain amount of, I wouldn't call it a vicious envy, but kind of a smiling envy between the angelic world and ours, because we span both the world of matter and, of course, the entire evolution of the mammal species and then the other species that came before us. And angels are kind of stuck in a world of spirit and psyche and consciousness, disembodied. So we're embodied spirits, and they're disembodied spirits. So I think there's a certain amount of envy in the light sense between angels and us, toward us.
If angels can't procreate, what about the Nephilim and the fallen angels, where they took the daughters of man?
Well, I don't think you can take that too literally, but yeah, I just don't think they have the wherewithal to procreate.
Rupert, what do you think?
All right, understanding of procreation.
Well, I just have to say I don't know about that. you know, it's very hard to know what that could mean. I mean, it's a kind of a theme that often occurs in mythology. You know, gods in Greek mythology, there's lots of cases of gods procreating with humans. It's, for me, very hard to understand how that could possibly happen or what it might mean. So, you know, it's if there were examples today, then we could say more about it and investigate it. But with these ancient texts, it's not always clear what's going on. So I'd leave that one to Matthew. He's already...
Well, I've got to tell you both, too. Great discussion with both of you. We are out of time. Matthew Fox, Rupert Sheldrake, thank you so much. The Physics of Angels. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burrows, George Knapp, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.